Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the constantly changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Jeff Barton, and your voice in the mortgage industry. Today with me again is Arvi Abramian. Hi, Arvi.
How you doing, Jeff?
I'm just great. Thank you. I don't know if the audience knows, but Arvi has been promoted to VP over here at Malibu Funding. Want to congratulate him. Yay!
Thank you.
His experience, loyalty, and obviously the knowledge in the industry as well as the way he works. Most of the audience knows that he's also studying to be a medical doctor, so this is one ambitious guy. And yes, girls, he does have a girlfriend, so sorry about that. Or boys, I don't know. I'm sorry we never talked about that. Okay, so let's get back to the show. Arvi, what do we have for him today?
There's a lot of news in the news.
Okay.
So how do we say it?
News you can use.
News you can use.
Okay, what is it? Let's hear it.
Okay, these are from Daily News, Mortgage News Daily.
Okay.
One of the things I want to bring up, because next Fed meeting will take place in October 29th.
Okay, that's the Federal Open Market Committee meeting, which we've talked about many times on the show.
Correct.
All right, what are the bias that we're looking at from the minutes or from the meeting?
Well, here's certain things that they caught up there. It's the pace of global economic growth caused a large stock market decline, so the stock market is declining right now.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? So this particular article is pointing to the global slowdown as a reason that the market's tanked, as opposed to investor-driven profits versus investor-driven profits, meaning that the market goes up and down having nothing to do with the economy. So which is it? Is it really about the world, or is it they just use events to make people think that's what it is and investors actually—
It's too complex.
Yeah, it is.
I mean—
You're right. It is. It is complex.
Economists sit down and they go up, start like digging through this, and it can go anywhere.
Well, the automated trades that they have now, which can be done in a blink of an eye, billions of shares traded based on an uptick or a downtick in the market or in a particular stock, they're done so quickly, and they're investor-driven. That's why I'm always looking at the markets as, okay, the ultimate gamble, forget Vegas, go into the stock market, and then try to follow world events and try to be a step ahead or a step behind, because shorting the market is just as profitable as longing it, right?
And that's great, like you talked about investors, because another thing, it says investors are shifting their rates to safer assets such as MBS.
Mortgage-backed securities. Okay, yeah. So let's talk about mortgage-backed securities for a second. The audience probably knows, and I'll re-explain it again. When I do a loan for Mr. and Mrs. Jones or somebody in the neighborhood, a refi or a purchase loan, Malibu Funding then sells that loan to any number of investors, people that then package 50, 100, 1,000, 50,000 loans together and sell them to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or Ginnie Mae. Those entities, which are the government entities that buy loans from everybody, package those particular products together, all those loans together, and they sell bonds based on the yield. All those loans together have a number. That number that those particular mortgages make every month is a yield. And so they package those together and sell off that yield a bond to investors, which are called mortgage-backed securities. The mortgage-backed security market is obviously must be doing fairly well.
It's doing great.
Okay.
And that's what's keeping the rates low.
That's okay. Explain that to me, because as again, I'm the dumb consumer here. I don't really understand it.
Just think about a stock. You purchase a stock, and more like people and try to buy that is basically supply and demand.
Right. So the price would go up.
Price will go up.
So the mortgage-backed security price goes up, yield goes down.
Correct.
And the rate of mortgages goes down.
Correct.
Now why? Explain it to me.
Because
it's the supply of money.
Supply and demand. So like people invest, so they bring the rates down. So the rates are down. Guess what? More people are going to refi. More people are going to purchase a house. More people are going to get qualified for that mortgage they were looking to get.
Look at it like this. You've got a lot of money out there in the marketplace. The money is going to cost more, or it's going to cost less. If someone is bundling mortgage-backed securities, and the demand for those securities means that the money you make off it, the yield, will go down, which means they have to spend more money to buy them, which means that particular money, which Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, and Ginnie Mae has, gets lent back to the mortgage industry. Therefore, there's more money in the mortgage industry, and the more money in the mortgage industry means you have to lower the rates to get demand up.
Correct.
So that's why, see that? I figured that out.
That's what Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are. They're there to clear up the money so banks can lend again.
Absolutely. And that's the whole purpose to it. Now, these entities didn't exist. When did they come about? After the Depression, right?
After the Depression.
1935, 1936, the Banking Acts, which put Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae into business, which basically said that the government, the Fed would, the Fed and Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae came first, then Freddie Mac later, then Ginnie Mae and Ellie Mae and some of the other companies that buy mortgages and then sell mortgage-backed securities, they came along later. But it was to stabilize the mortgage industry, to supply money to the lenders so that there would be a constant supply of money for people to go out and buy homes. And as a direct result of these things, it has fueled the economy since the 30s. And as the markets go up and down based on either world events, based on, you know, whatever does happen in the real world economy, these backbones of the economy is really what's driving the growth.
Correct.
It's not the stock market, it's the other way around. So in order to give young people who are saddled with debt from school, who really are or don't have good jobs, they want to incentivize these people with cheap money in a market so that they can go out and for relatively cheap get a home. I mean, obviously the prices have gone up, although they have flattened.
Yeah. And Fannie and Freddie Mac, actually, they're talking about to ease up their guidelines.
Yes, they have. And I saw that. Did you see what the exact easing was going to be?
They're still negotiating. They're still talking about. They said they're going to release it later on this month. So I'm assuming they're going to release it on October 24th. After
right.
That.
Now, is it going to be credit? They're going to lessen their credit requirements? Or are they going to? Now, last month, there was a guideline that came down from Freddie Mac that said, look, we are no longer going to source funds. What is it? Sourcing. They didn't need source funds for gifts. Isn't that what it was?
Yes.
On purchases?
Yeah.
So if you're out there right now and you've got, the desire and the money to make a mortgage payment, but you do not have 3.5% on a FHA loan or 20% down for a conventional or 10% down, you usually had to go to mom, dad, you had to go to a friend, an uncle, somebody, and get gifts. But those people then had to source for the bank where that money came from. It's all this anti-money laundering that they were, trying to prevent, either from terrorists or from drugs. But now they've eased that requirement. So you do not have to source your gift funds. So if mom and dad give you 3.5% down to go buy that house, it's one less thing you have to document, and that's a good thing.
That's a great thing. I mean, the market is going to start moving forward because right now it's stuck.
It's a little bit stuck. I agree with that. And I think one thing that makes it stuck, it's fall time. People are in school. They're not focused on moving. So the purchase market is slowed.
The holidays,
too.
Purchasing gifts.
Now, have you got this week's average weekly mortgage rate?
Mortgage rates, actually, yes. They are 30-year fixed,
yep.
Anywhere between 3.75 to 4%.
Okay.
And it's up from last week.
It is up from last week. So if you didn't get in last week, don't be slow. Get in on it this week. I was going to say something mean, but don't. Look, if you're out there and you're listening to the show, understand that rates are volatile. And when they dip, you want to be in a position to lock that rate. So I want you to give us a call. What's the phone number, Herbie?
It's 888-713-2929.
And the
or
website?
You can go to website.
What is it?
www.malibufunding.net.
Also, we are on Facebook. As everybody knows, Twitter and Facebook, that's the way you communicate nowadays. Anybody in the millennial area, anybody under 30 years old, Facebook, home loans, and you will have Malibu Funding pop up. Also, info@MalibuFunding.net. That's our email address. We get a lot of information sent to us, and we provide a lot of information through all of these sources. The radio show itself is on the website, so go to the website, www.MalibuFunding.net. Okay, so we've got a Fed Open Market Committee meeting happening. It's going to help us decide what the new landscape is going to be in the next 3 months. What are your prognostications? Quickly.
I'm saying they're going to ease it up. and it's gonna move the market forward.
So it's gonna up demand.
Correct.
So which means that the rates will probably go up.
They will go up.
Okay, so that's another reason
it's
why
a,
you should.
It's the yin yang. Is that you?
Exactly
one thing
right.
goes up, the other one comes down.
Right. Okay. Very good. Hey, Harvey, great opening. Let's get to the show. My name is Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. 888-713-2929 is the phone number. Get in line, and we'll answer your calls. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit MalibuFunding.net. MalibuFunding.net. We'll be right back with more on AM 1220 KDOW. Welcome back to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton on AM 1220 KDOW.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. 888-713-2929 is the phone number. You can also reach us at info@MalibuFunding.net. We are very excited and always trying to bring to the audience different perspective on money, different types of money. We've had business owners. We have do a great entrepreneurial section to the show on a biweekly basis. And today we have another great guest on the show. Been in this particular industry for, well, as he was telling me just off the air, since its inception, Bob Peisner. Hi, how are you, Bob?
I'm fine, Jeff. How are you?
I'm just fine, thank you. He works for Worldwide Merchant Services. Now, Merchant Services, for those of you, well, Bob, you know, why don't you just tell the audience what Merchant Services are? I'm sure everybody has used them many millions of times, but just to get them educated a little bit about what you do, can you explain it briefly for our audience?
Certainly. What we do, in a nutshell, is provide the merchant, whether that be a walk-in card swipe merchant with brick and mortar, or a merchant who is selling on the internet or over the phone or via infomercial. We give any merchant the ability to accept all credit cards as a payment for their service or product. That's exactly what a merchant service company does. We are contracted through various U.S. banks.
Okay.
To provide services and merchants for them. We are, in essence, a marketing arm known in the industry as either an ISO, which is Independent Sales Office, or MSP, which is a merchant service provider for MasterCard, and ISO for Visa. So we represent the agent bank. Only the banks themselves can be members of Visa and MasterCard. No one represents Visa and MasterCard directly, except the bank.
Okay, very good. So I'm a guy, I'm at a store, and I want to buy an item, and I whip out my credit card, and I slide it through the system. That's what you handle from then on, right? You work the actual transaction.
We work with the merchant to give him whatever form of acceptance he needs.
Okay.
Be that a terminal, processing through the internet, through our own gateway. We happen to own our own gateway, which is called PayGate.
Okay.
And that's a processing gateway where you can actually swipe over the internet as well with a card reader attached to your USB port. So there's a number of different methods of card acceptance, direct swiping, or manually entered, or on the internet via a shopping cart.
Okay, the one thing you just hit upon, which is fascinating to me because it's brand new in the industry, what they call the square or something similar to that, where you attach it to your cell phone, you swipe a card, and the transaction goes through. You handle stuff
Correct.
Like that as well?
There are a number of those now.
Okay.
Giving the small homeowner, small business owner, swap meet vendor.
Right.
The ability that he did not have before to be underwritten through a major bank, to get a credit card terminal, which is expensive.
Right.
In most instances today, those card readers are given free to the customer so long as they process through the particular vendor.
Okay, let me ask you a question. It sounds like it's a free-for-all. I mean, for me, am I to trust the local guy at the swap meet with a square or one of those reader devices? I mean, how secure is that stuff?
The devices need to be tested and ultra-secure before they're allowed to be used.
Okay.
So the merchant's liability is relatively small,
I see.
But the industry has what's called PCI rules, and they have to be PCI compliant.
Right.
And there are forms to fill out, and your acquiring bank that you're processing through walks you through those procedures.
Okay.
So that you do become compliant and therefore not responsible for any kind of a breach like the Target breach or any of the other ones.
Now, I'm a consumer. You know, like a lot of consumers out there, we really don't understand how any of this works. All we know is that I want something, I use a piece of plastic, and I get it. The problem is for me, and it has happened to me, and recently I spent a whole show talking about it, is that when somebody else gets a hold of your number and they begin to use your number in purchasing items, and then you find out about it, and you as the consumer want to track this down, you want to hunt it down, you want to be the police. But in my particular case, and maybe this is true or isn't true with you, what happened is I couldn't get information from anybody about either the person who did the thing, about where to go. It was all just fill out forms. This is arm's length. We'll be in touch with you. Is this an industry-wide? Obviously, it's an industry-wide problem. But how much can I, as a consumer, get involved with any of the stuff that does go wrong?
Unfortunately, yes. The privacy laws and the government's fingers and through all administrations, this one, prior ones, and the
right.
next ones too, the privacy regulations are getting stiffer and stiffer, so that you are covered. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, Amex, they all have what are known as chargeback provisions.
Of course.
And if you have something that doesn't belong to you, in the long run, you're not going to pay for it. You call your issuing bank, the number on the back of your card,
right.
tell them you didn't do it, and it should automatically be reversed, and you get that taken off your bill.
Right.
Sometimes they'll investigate it while they're doing it, but it's still off your bill. And in the long run, you're protected from that type of theft of your card number. They'll automatically replace the card with a new one.
Sure.
But you will virtually never have access to who committed the breach, who did it, who took it. Privacy laws don't allow you to get that information.
Okay, I'm a little old school, okay? I grew up in the 50s and the 60s. The personal responsibility and then finding the bad guy and punishing him, that was kind of what was drilled into my head. I don't know, maybe you have the same upbringing. It seems a little backwards. I mean, I live in a small town in Southern California, and this was at a local merchant. We kind of knew who the person was who did it, you know, and what you're saying is exactly right. I had no rights at all. I wanted to get the guy and get him arrested, but you went to the police, they didn't really care. Sure, you fill out a police report, but it gets filed in the you-know-what, and all of a sudden I'm like, well, this seems insane to me.
I know, and it becomes, with the authorities, it becomes a matter of priorities.
Sure.
If your card got hit for an extra $80 or something,
right.
or a few
that's
hundred
right.
dollars,
yeah.
it's at the bottom of the pile. In plain English, that's the way it is when 57 million card numbers get stolen from a Target or a any other major retailer. That obviously takes priority. We all want to put the bad guys in, and if in fact you knew who did it in the beginning, that's
right.
a huge help to the authorities. You could then file a complaint.
Well,
but in general,
right.
unfortunately, they don't know who did it, so it becomes an investigation. And it's by no means the squeaky wheel for one card holder.
Okay, let's shift gears a little bit. Business-wise, in terms of merchant services and stuff, obviously everything is done with credit. Our particular business is credit for homes through mortgages that we give them. In your particular field, what are you looking for in terms of collateral when you issue merchant services to a bank, or I mean to a merchant or something like that? Like somebody wants to get a credit
right.
card machine or use you. How does that end of the business work for you guys?
Well, the industry, you know, used to be when you grew up in it and I grew up in it, when there was just a little book you had to open and see if the card number was in there or stolen.
Right.
And there were no electronic machines taking the transactions. That you literally had to walk the slips to the bank and make a deposit.
Right.
But the rates were 5%, 6%, and 7% that you were paying, that the merchant was paying
right.
for that service.
Right.
Today, with electronic transactions, the service is much quicker, much safer, and much less expensive. That's why there are so many competitors in the industry.
Of
And the rate structures today are so complicated that most people, and even many ISOs, cannot interpret their monthly merchant statement for exactly what it is actually costing them.
I see. Yeah, that makes it makes no sense, but it makes perfect sense. Yes, I've had many, many instances. I used to have a merchant service account. This was years ago when I used to own a bar, and it was exactly that. You'd look at your statement and be like, uh-oh, I have no idea what I'm getting.
Exactly. I mean, you can, and any merchant can do the raw math and take his total costs and divide it by the volume so he knows what his average is. But today, Visa, MasterCard, and Discover each have close to 300 different categories of what's called interchange, which is raw cost.
Right.
It's what the associations charge the bank for the processing. So interchange, if you have a personal card, which virtually no one has anymore,
right,
they've got rewards cards, cashback
right,
cards,
right,
corporate cards, you know, all different types, and each type of card has a different cost associated with it, a check card, a debit card, and it goes on ad infinitum.
Hey, Bob, do you
I can only tell you that if you're a merchant today and you're looking at your merchant statement and your merchant statement says the words qualified, mid-qualified, or non-qualified, if you see those words on your statement, you're probably being overcharged.
Yes, I
you
know.
You should be charged, as we bill all of our merchants, cost plus, which is interchange plus.
I'll say. Okay, so, Bob, do you have a toll-free number or number people can get a hold of you with further
yes,
questions?
Yes, we do. We have our toll-free number is 800-847-2662.
Okay.
And I that believe you could, it's 1-800-VISANMC, Visa and MasterCard.
Okay. Hey, thanks very much. I mean, this type of information is absolutely valuable, and would like to have you back on the show again, but I really appreciate it. Bob, thanks very much for coming on.
You're quite welcome, and anytime, I'll be happy to continue.
Great. And this is Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thank you.
This is The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For questions or comments, send email to info@malibufunding.net. Don't go away. The Mortgage Voice will return in a moment on AM 1220 KDOW. Now back to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton on AM 1220 KDOW.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. 888-713-2929 is the number. And make sure that you get on the phone right now. We have some interesting and amazing guests. Again, this week, we've been picking it up in terms of both entrepreneurs on the show, different perspective of people in business, trying to not only encourage and illuminate, but also to psych people up out there. I mean, there's a ton of opportunity in the marketplace for people to get back to work. It isn't in the traditional sense. The jobs are not available the way they were when I was growing up, which was back in the 50s and the 60s. However, the opportunity that you can bring to the marketplace is just one idea away and a heck of a lot of work. Today, I wanted to get to a couple of people. One of them is online with us right now is Chris Allred. Chris Allred has worked for Malibu Funding, has worked for the Compliance Group and a number of different companies to help them wend or wind their way through the regulatory aspects of what we do in the mortgage business. Chris, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jeff?
I'm just fine. Thank you. Correct me if I have made any errors in terms of your introduction, but Chris, how long have you been doing compliance for not only for us, but in the industry itself?
I'd say about 10 years now.
Okay. Give our audience, because I think everybody blamed the mortgage broker for the meltdown. And the mortgage broker, which is me in some respect, as my audience knows, we are also a lender. But in terms of the changes that we've gone through in terms of regulatory aspects with the local BRE here in California, the Bureau of Real Estate, as well as the NMLS system, and kind of a historical perspective of where we were, how far it's come, and where we are today.
Well, I think in terms of what it's done a little bit is it's kind of hurt the little guy, so to speak, the mom and pop brokerage shops. because what happened was a lot of the big banks were able to ride the storm and get through it and really kind of hop over a lot of the regulatory and compliance issues that were really at hand with a lot of the loan originations and things like that when the meltdown happened. So it really kind of put the smaller brokers and lenders in a crunch, and that's really where they needed their compliance.
Okay. Where, at the bank level or at the mortgage broker level?
At the mortgage loan level. The banking level, really, they kind of, in my opinion, they kind of got off a little easy.
Right. And is that because of the requirements on testing, background checks, the rest of it for small mom-and-pop brokerages across the U.S. versus the banks who really only had to register their people? I mean, how do you see that?
Exactly. So, you know, if you were a bigger bank, you know, you simply were registered somebody and, you know, they were now working for you, where if you were a smaller to medium size, you know, brokerage or lender, you were having to, you know, go through a national test and then each individual state exam, doing all your continuation for each state. So it really put a lot of the pressure on the smaller to medium sized guy, and you know the big guys were able to kind of skate right over a lot of the requirements, which you know the education portion and you're speaking to people, that's a big requirement that they got to sidestep.
Right. Okay. So, all right. That's where we were before, which was less regulation. Now we've got heavy regulation on the mortgage broker. How has it changed in terms of trying to get you either approved as a broker or approved as a loan officer? Does it take a long time? I mean, what is the time, issue here for somebody who wants to get into the business or someone who's trying to get recertified or reauthorized to do loans every year? What is the time frame for this?
Well, with the formation of the NMLS, the National Mortgage Licensing System, it was really supposed to streamline the whole process.
Right.
But, you know, there is that big but. In many ways, it's kind of slowed it down, especially when you start getting licensed in multiple states at times, because I think that the idea was good behind it was that, hey, if there's an issue in one state, a regulator from another state that you might be licensed in knows about some type of deficiency or anything that has gone on.
Right.
Where a lot of times what happens is there'll be little things that really aren't deficiencies that are, you have to explain to one state and another state is now picking them up. So you're now explaining things that really don't matter,
to multiple
from
states.
Different states.
Sure.
But you're now having to explain it to say, you know, 5 to 10 to 15 times, depending on how many states you're licensed in.
Right.
And so that takes a lot of extra work, a lot more compliance, you know. So it makes it a little tougher at times. There are some nice things about it in terms of background checks and that things stay there for, you know, 90 days.
Right.
But it can also, you know, it's a little bit convoluted the way that they did set up the system.
Okay, and what is the cost? I know for my audience, understanding what a loan officer for Malibu Funding or any mortgage broker or for that matter, any BRE, which is the Bureau of Real Estate licensed entity here in California, the cost to the individual smaller, medium-sized companies, not the banks, because they're completely regulated differently, but the cost to do this on a yearly basis, just run this down so people get a real good idea as to, hey, I'm going with a mortgage broker. Everybody's been blaming them for the entire meltdown. You know, I'm not quite sure whether they're – not only is there a background check and there is the testing that they have to go through on both the federal and the state level, as well as a number of other documentations that they have to provide, credit certainly, but there is a cost here that is borne by smaller brokerages. So can you just explain that so people understand there's a heck of an investment in this?
Yeah, well, what you're going to have is you're going to have any time that you're going to have your education, which is your pre-licensed education.
Right, that's
then you're
20
gonna have,
hours, right?
Generally,
that's...
you're going to have your national testing.
Right.
So your pre-licensed education is probably a couple $100.
Yep.
Your national testing might be, you know, in that area of $100 or a couple hundred, depending on, you know, what test it is.
Right.
You then have your state licensing application that you're going to have to apply for, which is generally a couple more $100.
Right.
And, you know, from there, you're going to have your renewals, you're going to have your continuing education that has to go along with it. So I've seen this actually a lot. People that come from the bigger banking sector where they really haven't had any of this cost, and then they try to come on board, and they don't really realize it and what the cost and the regulations are, you know.
Right. And I, you know, the thing about what you're just saying is that the BRE, the Bureau of Real Estate, the application that you submit through the NMLS, there's a fee for the NMLS, and there's a $350 application fee through the NMLS to just become a mortgage broker. But in order to work with the BRE, you already have to be a salesperson. To become a salesperson might cost you $1,000. So the entire process of becoming a licensed Bureau of Real Estate salesperson and then to get your National Mortgage Licensing System endorsement might cost you $2,500.
Oh yeah, especially you know when you look on a yearly basis because
that's
you have
right.
your continuing education that gets involved.
That's
and,
right.
and everything. Absolutely.
Yeah, so the costs that are borne by smaller companies, for instance, Malibu Funding has 40, 50 different mortgage loan officers in 12 different states. If the company bears the responsibility of that every year, it can cost thousands of dollars, not to mention the people that have to do the job. You have to pay them as well, which, of course, Chris does that for not only my company but several different companies. Chris, do you have a phone number people might be able to get in touch with you if they had regulatory issues? Issues in terms of trying to get their particular companies in compliance or relicensed or licensed?
Absolutely. It's area code 619-723-0891.
Now, my audience is in both San Francisco, San Jose, and the Oakland area up in the Bay in the Seven County area, also down in the Los Angeles market out in Las Vegas, and I think we can be heard down in the San Diego market. That 619 number is a San Diego number, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, awesome. Now, in your capacity in what you do, where do you see this going in terms of regulatory? You think it's going to get easier or harder?
I don't see it getting any easier, that's for sure.
Right.
I don't know what it's really going to do, but I definitely don't see it as being any easier.
Okay. Well, Chris, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your experience with people and also the number that you gave out for people to get in touch with you, especially those people in the industry who need someone just like you. That's Chris Allred. My name is Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks a lot, Chris. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Okay.
Bye.
For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. And stick around for more of The Mortgage Voice on AM 1220 KDOW. Welcome back to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton on AM 1220 KDOW.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Malibu Funding, Inc., 888-713-2929 is the phone number. You can also reach us by going to the website, www.malibufunding.net. Reach us by email, too. Email is a great way to get in touch with us with questions about the show, with questions about a loan scenario you might have, or you just have questions about what we talked about on the show. Info@MalibuFunding.net. That's our email. I'm really happy today. I have got a great and experienced person who is the owner of a Southern California REMAX office as well as escrow company, and they also do mortgage loans. So I wanted someone with breadth and knowledge in the entire span of the business to come on and share with our audience, share with you the experiences and both maybe give some humorous story or two about what it is to be an owner of all three of those businesses. As everybody in our audience knows, we have a whole section that is dedicated to entrepreneurs, and certainly you qualify for that. Stuart Schoenwetter, how are you, Stuart?
Wee-haw! I am just so happy to be here. I got to tell you, Jeff, you are amazing. You are in the presence of someone who I've admired for years and years and years. We've been compatriots. We've been
yes,
people
we have.
Who have had competing companies, and it is just...
Yes.
And we've worked together as well. It's just such a pleasure. This man knows his loans. He knows his real estate. He knows his stuff. So I am very proud to be here.
When we were talking off air, I was saying, you know what? We've had a couple of guests the past few shows, kind of put the audience to sleep. Can you kind of pick it up? So he obliged with the yeehaw. So I really appreciate that very much. First question for you. When you got in the business versus the way it is today, what do you think are the major differences, and how do you handle both from a customer standpoint, a consumer standpoint, and obviously the employees that work for you?
You know, I started in the business right when we first had our first mobile telephone.
Okay.
And I would say that if there was any kind of a change in the business, it would be that our cell phones are a lot smaller.
Right, exactly. Now, you're talking, what, 1985, 88?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
88.
So, okay, 88, 98, 08. Okay, so it's almost 25 years anyway, if not a little bit more.
Yes.
Okay, so the difference is the cell phones are smaller. Do you find that your time, the technology was supposed to save us time. We were all supposed to have greater leisure time. What do you think technology has done in our business?
I think technology is fantastic. It's made us more available to our customers, and that way we can provide them better service. And that's really what we want to do, is just to take care of our customer 24/7. Doesn't matter where I am, middle of the night, I am there to open up my phone and to answer questions.
Well, it's funny because you're not catching this on our live feed for video, but it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, and I can see that. Obviously, having all of your time eaten up by your customers is not a way to live a life, and we all do have a life, but we are available. I mean, that is the way our business is nowadays.
Yeah, and you know what? For me, it's funny. I don't really get that many calls. I probably need to be more busy, but I do love it when people call me, especially agents, clients, et cetera, and I love the easy questions.
Right.
Because a lot of people don't know certain things. They think, oh, I shouldn't ask that. And when they ask me that, I go, oh, I know that. That's really easy.
Okay, give me an example. What are they talking about? Like, what's a purchase contract? Or what are the interest rates? Or, how much does this cost?
What is the... I just had one today, so give an example.
Go.
Okay, here's a lady who's doing a short sale.
Right.
And for those of you who don't know in the audience, a short sale is a loan where the bank is going to be taking less money than they're owed to close the loan and sell it to the new buyer and release the current owner of the obligation to continue to pay them on that mortgage.
Okay.
So my agent called me. She said, can I have a loan. Should I put the person who is on the loan on the short sale, or should I put the current owner
on
the short sale?
Okay, very good.
Okay,
yep.
Now, I'm sorry it took a long time to get there.
But the
idea is, no, it has to be the person on the loan because they're the ones who are going to be getting the relief.
That's the ones
who are going to be getting the
short
sale.
Now, question, and you might be able to answer me this. It used to be, before we got into the down market after 2007, that the relief that they would receive from the bank would actually be added to their income, and they would be taxed on it.
Yes, that is correct. And you know what? I know certain things, and I know that I shouldn't say certain other things.
Okay, very good.
And so as a real estate broker and a licensed mortgage loan originator and a president of an escrow company, I could tell you that that is a question for someone who is an accountant or a CPA.
Or your tax professional,
tax professional, because the laws are very specific. In general, there have been a lot of laws which relieve homeowners of that requirement to add additional income or pay additional income taxes on something, money that
based on the relief they got in the short sale.
On the relief in the short sale, but every situation is specific, and talk to your tax professional about that.
Okay, very good. And we as professionals in the real estate industry get asked all kinds of questions, and we were bantering back and forth. There's a new purchase contract out written by the California Association of Realtors legal team, headed up by a group of realtors on the Purchase Contract Committee. This is not a simple document. It's never been a simple document, and we pass it around like it's a fill in the blank, but it's really not. So this particular, of the new purchase contract, what would you say is the most, I guess, startling or the biggest change that you see in the contract? We were talking about it earlier.
Well, the biggest change in this contract will not affect the local listeners here in the Bay Area, because it really is conforming the contract more in terms of what is the current practice, the customary practice in Northern California. So in Northern California, the customary practice is that the termite inspection and the termite work is done pretty much completely outside of escrow.
Okay.
But in Southern California, the termite work was usually called out between what we had Section 1, which is active infestation,
right,
and then Section 2, which is something that might be likely to lead to an infestation. Okay. And so most of the contracts in Southern California had this provision where the seller was responsible for fixing the termite work no matter how much it cost.
Right. That's right.
And so the great wisdom of our association in terms of making an 8-page contract 10 pages.
Yes, good.
Also said, hey, let's go ahead and remove one form from our arsenal, and let's just let this termite inspection and the termite work be bundled together with the rest of the physical inspection and the other physical components of the property and how that would be negotiated between the buyer and the seller.
So it's not predetermined that this will happen. It is a negotiation after the inspections.
Yes, it's okay. A negotiation, and it's funny, but it's funny to me anyways that they have so taken the termite out of this contract that they don't even have a tick box anymore for a termite report.
Right, exactly. So this is all part of the negotiations or the buyer's determination based on whatever they do with inspections.
Yes.
What are you recommending to your agents? Are you recommending that they ask for the seller to pay for it, or are they going to have their buyers pay for it?
Well, you know, I have yet to give a complete recommendation, but customarily we would have a seller pay for Section 1 termite work.
That's right.
And the buyer pay for Section 2 termite work.
Right.
And I have a feeling that what's going to happen is that we're going to see that continue customarily through
the local area, but not necessarily statewide.
Yes, it's not going statewide anyway.
Right,
so I think locally that will happen. I think that it will slowly transition to it just being part of an inspection, and many homes will not even get a termite inspection as they go through their sale process because it's just not in the form.
Stuart, I really want to thank you for coming on the show. We're going to have you back because we didn't even touch on there's so much information from guys like him.
Great.
My name is Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Stuart, thank you very much.
Call Jeff.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit MalibuFunding.net. MalibuFunding.net. We'll be right back with more on AM 1220 KDOW. Now back to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton on AM 1220 KDOW.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Jeff Barton, along with Arby Abramian. Hi, Arby.
How you doing, Jeff?
We're Malibu Funding, your voice in the mortgage industry, 888-713-2929. And the website again?
It's www.malibufunding.net.
Okay, great show. I want to thank our guests that were on today, Bob Peisner and Chris Allred. Two diverse, completely different topics, but certainly really affect you in the marketplace, determining for yourself who you're going to use, i.e. compliance. You want somebody that's licensed out there, somebody who's got the experience, somebody who's been through all the necessary steps that we as mortgage people have to go through in order to get licensed here in the state of California. Obviously, in the state of Nevada, it's even harder. And some of the other states that we're involved in, Malibu Funding is in 12 states, as you know. And also, I wanted to thank Bob Peisner. Bob very interesting in the merchant services area, describing for us not only the security measures that needed or are not. In my personal case, if you're, you know, a person out there who's had this kind of problem with their credit cards, yes, you get reimbursed, but the guys who do it never get caught. They never get put in jail unless it's a huge number of cases where the FBI gets involved. So I'm up in the air about whether I don't even know what to do. What do you do with credit card theft and, identity theft?
Oh, that's very harsh.
Well, that's what Bob was talking about. He runs merchant services, and, he said it. He said, hey, look, sorry. You know, the police aren't going to do anything for your $80, charge that's not
that's
yours.
Bad, yeah.
It's bad. You want to hunt the guy down and, ship him to jail.
But it's merchants, they reverse the charges.
Of course, but that's not the point. The point is that without somebody getting punished and put in the stockades, which, of course, they don't do, although I'm all for bringing that back for credit card people. bring that back. Also, let's see. What else did we talk about? We talked about the Federal Open Market Committee meeting that's coming up. Very fascinating, interesting ideas that are coming from them about loosening the guidelines. That's what we talked about, as well as the supply and demand and what causes the rates to go up and down. Interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you're working on there, Arby? I know that you're busy with Malibu Funding and what you're doing. Tell the audience, how's your business?
Business is great.
Awesome.
It's picking up. We're very busy.
Yes, we are.
We're getting a lot of calls from listeners.
From the radio
clients.
Show.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely right.
They just have questions, so they call and we're here to help them out.
That's a good point. 888-713-2929 with the questions that you're going to have for myself or Arby. We have a lot of different ways that we can help you. We can help you both as a correspondent lender. Look, there's a call right now that just came in. If everybody heard that, I should have shut that off. I'm sorry. That's really rude. I know. But at least it shows you that, yes, we are here. The phone is ringing and we can help you. So make sure you give us a call and let us know how we can help you. Another thing I wanted to talk about just quickly and briefly is we talked a little bit about the rates, and we talked rates about purchase and refinance. In terms of special programs, in the refinance area, if you've got a interest rate that is hovering over 4.5% and you've made a purchase of a house within the last year and a half, call us. We can drop that rate. As a correspondent lender, you can save a ton of dough, and we'll be able to get you into a 30-year fixed or even a different type of product if that's what you're looking for, right?
That's right.
Okay, so my name is Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Today with me again is Arby Abramian.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thanks very much, Arby, and give us a call, and we'll see.
This has been The Mortgage Voice with veteran mortgage broker Jeff Barton of Malibu Funding Incorporated. For more information, visit MalibuFunding.net, where you'll find a podcast of this program along with past programs. You can also email Jeff Barton directly at info@MalibuFunding.net. And be sure to join us again next week at this time for The Mortgage Voice.
Jeff Barton, NMLS number 7968, and Malibu Funding, Inc., NMLS number 79620, are an equal housing lender. APR and ARM interest rates and loan options are subject to change based on market conditions and borrower eligibility.